Welcome to Spirit of the Camino, a podcast about the unique and magical experience that is the Camino de Santiago. Join us on this adventure and discover the spirit of the Camino for yourself.
Hello, and welcome to the first episode of the fourth season of the Spirit of the Camino podcast. I'm Nick, and I'm here with Wendy, and it's been a while since we've done this.
It has, so let's see if we remember how to do it. A lot has happened. We've been busy with various things, different projects. I was in Ethiopia for a few months, and now we're back, and excited to be on Camino again soon.
All right, so this season is called Fatima and Beyond, so that already gives a little bit of a spoiler as to what's included. We do have a couple of pilgrimages and at least one other walk planned, and so that's what we're going to be talking about in this season. And we are beginning tomorrow with a walk to Fatima.
So what is Fatima? Obviously, it's not Santiago, which is where we, that's the usual endpoint of our pilgrimages. So let's let everyone know, because not everyone does know, what is Fatima, where is it, why would people want to make a pilgrimage there?
Yeah, it is true that in Portugal, the Camino de Santiago and the Caminos that go to Fatima are sometimes merged together in a way. So people who do walk a Portuguese Camino, if they start in Lisbon, or at least, you know, in one of the southern Caminos, do often have an idea about Fatima, and there is the option of diverting from the Camino de Santiago to reach Fatima, but really it does stand alone in other ways. And so Fatima is the most important pilgrimage place in Portugal. So essentially, it's not a perfect comparison in any way, but essentially it is to Portugal what Santiago de Compostela is to Spain. And we're going to get into Fatima a lot more in a future episode once we reach it and talk about our experiences there. But essentially, in brief, in the early part of the 20th century, starting in 1916, and then mainly in 1917, these three shepherd children began to see apparitions of first an angel and then the Virgin Mary in the area around this place called Fatima, which is in central Portugal. And this was seen as a miracle, and it was very quickly adopted into the Catholic Church here in Portugal, and then became very quickly an extremely important place to go for pilgrimage, and something that was really, you know, had really become part of the Portuguese national character, I would say.
Yes, I'd say that's fair. And it still continues to be that today, more than 100 years after those events that took place. It's much more well known within Portugal than Santiago and the Camino to Fatima and the process, the whole pilgrimage concept of going to Fatima on a pilgrimage is the average Portuguese person would be much more familiar with that than they would with going to Santiago. And it has happened to us when we've been walking to Santiago, people have assumed that we were walking to Fatima and they've said, oh, you're going the wrong way. Or, you know, because, you know, depending on where you are in the country, they might be in opposite directions. So this time we're finally going the right way in the eyes of most of the people who we'll be meeting along the way.
Yeah, definitely. I think we talked about this in our first season, and I remember one time actually when we were still going the correct way to Fatima, but I had turned around to go back because I wanted to take a picture, and some local person saw me walking, as he saw it, the wrong way, which was going south, away from Fatima and away from Santiago, actually. And without saying anything else, he just said to me, Fatima's that way, and pointed in the other direction. But of course, I wasn't actually going to Fatima at that time. But yeah, it certainly is, as you said, what people assume you're doing. I mean, if you are, let's say, in Porto or north of Porto, then you're going to get people who understand that you're going to Santiago because you're a lot closer physically to Santiago. And as we've talked about before, northern Portugal and Galicia have a bit more of a rapport, and the Camino de Santiago is much more well known up there. But if you're anywhere south of Porto, really, I would say, people aren't really that familiar with the Camino de Santiago and much more with Fatima. But it's been interesting that, you know, because we've done quite a few Caminos in Portugal, and we'll often meet and talk with locals along the way, and sometimes they'll, like you said, assume we might be going to Fatima. Other times they might say, what are you doing, or where are you going? And if we say we're going to Santiago, they'll say something like, oh, you know, that's, wow, that sounds really far, you know, maybe I couldn't do that. But I have walked to Fatima before. Mm-hmm. And so that's often a way in, or a way that people choose to connect themselves with us to say, hey, we're pilgrims too. And that's been quite interesting because we've met a lot of people who have gone to Fatima.
Yeah.
And sometimes more than once. I remember, I think a story we told last season was that when we were leaving Chaves on the Portuguese interior route, and we were about to cross into Spain. So we're as far north in Portugal as you can get, basically. And this old lady kind of took us in and gave us fruit and biscuits and whatnot. But she said she had walked to Fatima three times, and she basically lived almost as far away as you can be from Fatima while being still in Portugal. So, you know, it's something where people from all over the country will do these walks to Fatima. And so much so that it's sort of a rite of passage where people will walk, and they'll do it in groups sometimes, whether that be a church group or a family group or some kind of school group or other kind of community-based group. And so it's very much that kind of feeling. And so given that it's a Portuguese rite of passage, we've decided to do it now because we are Portuguese.
What?
All of a sudden.
Yes, this has been about six and a half years in the making, but has been our goal ever since we moved here to Portugal in the beginning of 2017, was to get Portuguese citizenship, and we did it. We've got our national ID cards, we've got our Portuguese passports. So yeah, we are Portuguese, and I am approaching this as kind of a rite of passage or an initiation ritual, if you will. I just felt like this was the year to do it, to walk to Fatima now that we are Portuguese, and we should share this experience with other Portuguese people who've done it, and kind of, I think that will give me a better understanding of what it means to be Portuguese.
Yeah, and the timing worked out really well. Roughly, we had it planned this way, but we didn't know because the citizenship application, it takes some time. But it turns out that last week we got received our passports, and then we also went, or you went, to pick up our credenciais, which are the pilgrim passports for Fatima. So within, I think, 2 days, we had both the passport for the Camino to Fatima and the actual Portuguese passport. And so it all worked out really well. It was possible, depending on if the citizenship process took a bit longer, that we would perhaps have taken or have undergone this pilgrimage to Fatima without being citizens. But it has added an extra little element just the last couple of weeks that we've been thinking about it, that, yeah, this is something that we should do. And, you know, it kind of, hopefully, will consolidate the feeling that we have of being kind of Portuguese people.
Yeah, obviously we didn't grow up here. We don't share a lot of the experiences that most Portuguese people have had, but we have lived here for several years now. We do speak the language. I'm now making a real attempt to speak the language like a Portuguese person. We've talked about language on various occasions on the podcast, and you know, I'm a big language nerd and I love the Portuguese language, but I learned the Brazilian version of the language many, many years ago when I was at university and completely fell in love with it. The way that it's spoken here is very, very different, and I, up to this point, haven't really adjusted to that very well. So I had kind of made attempts to change the way that I spoke, and it wasn't working out. And so then I would just go back to speaking like Brazilian. But now that I'm Portuguese, I feel like I should speak like a Portuguese person. So I've been doing an online pronunciation course, which is put together by a guy named Leo. Portuguese with Leo is the name of his YouTube channel. I highly recommend the course for anyone who is learning Portuguese and wants to learn the European Portuguese version. So anyway, that is helping me, I think, to also kind of feel more Portuguese. And yeah, I feel like this is the perfect time for us to do this, to kind of consolidate this new part of our identity that we have.
Yeah, and it's been interesting. We've talked before, I think, about how, especially here in Lisbon, really, perhaps almost only here in Lisbon, when we speak Portuguese to people, they often just speak back in English, and that can be frustrating. It doesn't really happen to us when we're on Camino or when we're in more rural areas, which is really nice. But basically the day after, I think, or a couple of days after we had received our citizenship, then you were already saying to people, if they spoke to you back in English and then you continued in Portuguese, and they would say something like, oh, you speak Portuguese. And you would say, I am Portuguese.
Yeah, I did say that a couple of times, and I'm sure I will continue to say it if it's, you know, if the situation is appropriate. But I also have found, maybe it's my imagination, but I don't think so, since I've been doing this course, not very many people have responded to me in English. I feel like I am getting spoken back to in Portuguese a lot more, and that people are recognizing that, you know, I speak more like them. Obviously, I still sound like a foreigner, but yeah, maybe there's something that's more familiar. And so they're, you know, reacting positively to that, which is great.
All right, so for all of these reasons, we decided that one of our pilgrimages for this year would be to Fatima. One of the interesting things, though, about Fatima, about the routes to Fatima compared with the Camino de Santiago, is that there actually aren't really that many routes or that many trails, as we might call it. Mm-hmm. And so basically what we've ascertained, what we've gleaned from the conversations we've had when we've been talking to various people, you know, throughout the country, when we've been on Camino, and when they say they've gone to Fatima, they just walk to Fatima by the shortest possible way, I think, which a lot of times means you're walking on a road. And it's quite interesting that there aren't really many, and there are a couple, we'll talk about it in a minute, there aren't really these organized trails in the way that the Camino de Santiago is. It's just simply you walk from your house, mm-hmm. which in a way is cool because it goes back to medieval times, not for Fatima, but for Santiago, the idea that you just walk from your house and you just go as the crow flies, essentially. But what I think is interesting about that is that it, you know, I don't think that the people who are doing it, I think the people who are doing it here in Portugal, going to Fatima, are very much motivated by the religious aspect, much more so than in Spain. Certainly among the majority, I would say, of foreigners who walk the Camino de Santiago in Spain, but possibly even the Spaniards as well. You know, it's very common, for example, for people from Spain to travel to Sarria and then walk a few days of the Camino de Santiago in a very festive kind of atmosphere. They're not walking from their home, mm-hmm. Or at least, you know, many of them aren't. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot with the Camino de Santiago is that it's often more about the journey than the destination. And there is a destination in the end, but it's that journey along the way, especially if you're doing a very long pilgrimage. Portugal being a smaller country, typically people are walking fewer days and they're just sort of trying to get there. I think, mm-hmm. I feel like it's not really about being out in nature or, you know, walking through nice forests or this kind of thing. It's just like, no, we're going to Fatima and the point is just to get there. And we're going by foot because that's sort of what pilgrims do, but it's not really about the journey per se, more about just getting to Fatima.
Yeah, that's also the impression that I've had. And yeah, I totally agree that the main motivation is religion in the case of most Portuguese people who walk to Fatima. And I think perhaps they view it as something that's not supposed to be fun or easy or enjoyable. It's supposed to be hard. It's a sacrifice that you are making for religious reasons. And so, yeah, they do just walk along the side of the road a lot of the time, which is not pleasant and is something that we try to avoid doing as much as possible. But for them, you know, it's part of this difficult, arduous journey that they are undertaking as a way of worshiping their God.
Yeah, I would agree. And it takes you kind of back to the origins of pilgrimage or the original purpose of pilgrimage is that it's, you know, it is this arduous journey. Maybe now that we have, you know, that we can book accommodation in advance and get luggage transfer and all this kind of stuff on the Camino de Santiago, it's more, you can do it in a more, let's not say luxurious, but in a more pleasant way, let's say, rather than the true hardships of pilgrimage. And maybe the pilgrimage to Fatima does go back to that. But I think in recent years, and it's a little bit confusing in terms of who are the people who control these Caminos, but I think in recent years, there's been an attempt to maybe create some proper paths, some proper trails that go to Fatima. And in many cases, this is sort of piggybacking off the Camino de Santiago. So people who have walked the Portuguese Way, the main Camino in Portugal from Lisbon, will know that this heads in the same direction as Fatima for several days. And then when you get to Santarém, which is, depending on your pace, around 4 or 5 days from Lisbon, there is a deviation and you can walk, I think, in 2 days to Fatima from there. It's going a little bit towards the west or to the northwest. And then you can rejoin the Camino de Santiago. So a lot of international pilgrims will do that. Mm-hmm. They'll be walking the Portuguese Camino to Santiago, but they'll take a little deviation of a few days to go to Fatima. And so that may be their impression of what the Camino to Fatima is like. But as we've been talking about, it's not really that. It's not that people, for example, if you lived in another town in central Portugal, you wouldn't travel to Lisbon then to walk this path to Fatima. You just walk from where you live. And so there was a pilgrim association several years ago, which dealt a lot with these paths to Fatima. They've since closed their operation, and it's a long story and we don't want to get into it, but it's related to bottom-up pilgrim associations versus government top-down pilgrim initiatives. Anyway, there is another organization who were taking some sort of control of Caminos de Fatima, but if you go to their website at the moment, which is caminosdefatima.org, they really list five paths to Fatima, and four of them are essentially the same Camino de Santiago route from Lisbon. One of them heading up from the south, and they list three different ones. They all just start in various places in the north and then come down, but it's the same route, just starting at different places. And then the fifth one is just a link route from Nazaré, which is on the coast, to Fatima, which is just a couple of days. So basically, if you're looking for Caminos to Fatima, really you've got this main Portuguese Camino de Santiago, and then you can deviate to Fatima, and then there's this one other two-day thing from Nazaré. And that's a little confusing because there are others which perhaps are not under this umbrella, but the one that we're going to do, which we'll talk about in a minute, is listed as being in progress or coming soon. But as far as we're aware, it's a complete Camino. So there's a little bit of confusion about how to do this. But I think if you were looking to walk to Fatima coming from overseas, it would perhaps just be easier to combine it with the Camino de Santiago, but that's not really what Portuguese people do.
No, they do just walk from their home, and that's why you have this interesting phenomenon in Portugal that I don't think exists in Spain, where firefighter stations will allow pilgrims to stay overnight. They have beds there, you know, for the firefighters who sometimes have to be there on call during the night. And if beds are available, then they will allow pilgrims to stay. And it's because you have people, you know, starting in all different places all over the country, not walking a you know, established route with established accommodation. And so they may be passing through places where there just is no accommodation at all. Not only are there no pilgrims albergues, but there's also no hotels or anything because it's not a touristy place. And so that is the only option. And therefore, the firefighters open up their accommodation, which we've had the opportunity to do a couple of times walking in Portugal on lesser known routes. And it's been a really interesting experience. I don't think we'll be doing that this time, though.
Not this time. And unfortunately, it's becoming less and less available since or during the pandemic that some fire stations have said that they will not take pilgrims anymore. But no, you're right. And that is an interesting point. You know, in Spain, you look at the different routes, and obviously they're all going to Santiago, but certain routes will meet up and merge with other routes. And then you obviously, you know, you have more traffic going in the same direction. Like you said, that allows for accommodation options. So if you're coming, for example, from Madrid, you walk the Camino de Madrid. At a certain point at Sahagún, you connect with the Camino Francés, and then it sort of it bottlenecks that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for Fatima, if you live in random town A, then is there accommodation 20 kilometers towards Fatima from your random town A, and then another 20 or 25 or whatever it is from there? There may not be. We have chosen a particular route, and there's a little bit of confusion surrounding this, but we'll try to explain it. One of the things that we're going to do in the spirit of the Camino to Fatima is, for the second time, we're going to be walking out our front door from Lisbon. And that's something that you in particular really like, or you really like the aspect of pilgrimage.
Yes, I was excited to have the opportunity to do it when we walked the what is known as the Camino Português, the more typical route to Santiago going through Portugal. And that was in the height of the pandemic. So that was when we felt like it was the only kind of travel that we could do at that point, not taking any kind of public transport and just literally walking outside our front door. And now we have the chance to do that again, going to a different destination and taking a different route this time. Like you mentioned, we could just take the most well-known Camino de Fatima, which is also the Camino de Santiago. But since we've already done that, we're going to do something a little bit different.
Right. So from Lisbon, you have several options, I guess, to go north on a type of Camino path. And the first one, which you just mentioned, the standard Portuguese Camino. And so this heads north from Lisbon through places like Vila Franca de Xira, Azambuja, to Santarém, and then Tomar, or you can head towards Fatima from Santarém and then rejoin around Tomar and continue further north. There are also a couple of possibilities starting immediately going west from Lisbon and then going north that way. And there is confusion because people who are aware of the Portuguese Camino know that there is a coastal and a central version. This refers to a diversion that you can take in Porto by taking the coastal route, which is also connected with the Senda Litoral, or the more traditional central route. And we've
confusing too, the Senda Litoral, because that's the one that's actually on the coast. The coastal, well, I haven't done it, you have, so you can tell me. But from what I understand, the coastal is sometimes not like directly on the coast, on the beach, whereas the Senda Litoral is. So there's really three different options from Porto.
Yeah, no, that's right. So the coastal does go inland sometimes, and so you have that choice day by day for several days as to which one you want to do. And of course, we also have the Portuguese interior that we talked about last season, and people often confuse the central for the interior. Anyway, so that's confusing enough as it is. But this idea that there's coastal and central options, firstly, mm-hmm. and that secondly, you start your Camino in Porto, but there's the possibility of starting in Lisbon, mm-hmm. creates the idea that there's coastal and central from Lisbon. And there's sort of not really, but a little bit. So basically, if you walk from Lisbon west, within one day's walk, you can reach Cascais and you're at the ocean. And from there, if you want, you can continue to walk north, keeping the ocean to your left or to the west of you. And this is not, as far as I'm aware, a real Camino. It's a DIY type of Camino, but people who are attracted to the ocean and kind of have this idea in mind that you can do a coastal Camino in Portugal and you can start it from Lisbon, think, hey, let's do this. And this will take you through places like Nazaré, which is famous worldwide for its enormous waves, and to some other coastal places that are well known here, sort of in Portugal. And I've seen people, I've followed people on social media and on the Camino de Santiago forums who have done this, but I do really think it's a DIY Camino. And we are not super in favor of that.
We're not in favor of DIY Camino.
Yeah, I think when we walked the Camino in Ascent, which we talked about in season two of our podcast, we talked with some people who were involved in marking the Camino, and some of the things that they told us were quite interesting. And basically, the efforts that they were going to try to make it as pleasant as possible by diverting from the road and taking us on paths. And we were talking about how they had to get permission from landowners to do this, and were very successful for the most part, but a couple of times they were unable to do that. And it just made us realize how much effort can go into creating the best possible walking conditions for you. And it's one thing to kind of look at a map and say, okay, well, I see a road here going all the way up the coast, so we could just walk it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to do that, that's fine. But maybe you're going to be on asphalt a lot, which we don't like too much. Mm-hmm. And you know, there won't necessarily be signage, which in this day and age, now that we have tracks for all the Caminos that we walk, is perhaps less important, but it's always nice to have signage and to have arrows pointing your way, and it gives you motivation to continue and things like that.
And also adds more to the experience. You really feel the whole time like you're on Camino, that you're part of something bigger that other people have done and are doing.
Right. So that's just our choice. But, you know, within Spain and even Portugal, there are so many actual routes that it just seems like we might as well just keep picking those off and walking those rather than saying, let's just make one up. Of course, essentially, that's what pilgrims to Fatima do, is they make up a route and walk on the road. So we're trying not to do that. But basically, the second alternative in terms of going all the way to the coast, but then not actually hugging the coast, is to walk this other route, which is called the Camino do Mar. And this means the route or the trail of the sea. And it's quite misnamed, because it basically starts at the sea and then goes inland and never hits the sea again. So in a way, it's similar to the Portuguese coastal route that you mentioned just before. Mm. It's a little bit misnamed. And so this also adds further confusion to it. And about a year ago, the moderators at the Camino de Santiago forum were trying to redesign the forum and the different subcategories and whatnot. And they asked me to help them with the Portuguese section in terms of how do we label all of these different routes and which ones should have subforums and which ones shouldn't. And so we kind of went back and forth on this, and it was quite interesting just to go through that process and to really confirm, or at least the conclusion that we reached, was that this coastal from Lisbon doesn't really exist, but okay, it's a DIY Camino if you want it to be, but that there is the Camino do Mar, which takes you to Fatima, but it's not really on the coast at all. And so we tried to make it a bit less confusing for people who are looking at routes in Portugal and looking at that. The other thing about this Camino do Mar, and firstly, we've actually walked a couple of stages of it as day hikes, and we've seen arrows. Mm-hmm. So it is a marked Camino, at least for the first couple of days that we've seen. The official starting point is a town called Estoril, which is west of Lisbon, but not as far as Cascais. So it's around, off the top of my head, 20, 2-3 perhaps kilometers from Lisbon, and that's already a little bit quite interesting, a little bit strange, I think, to list Estoril as the starting point. I don't know what the motivation is for that or what the reasons were behind that, but in terms of people coming from overseas, they don't really know typically what Estoril is. People who are Portuguese, as we've sort of said, they're not going to travel to Estoril and then begin this route very often at all. They're going to walk from their own house to Fatima. And so we're going to walk the first day basically along the river before we get to Estoril. So we're starting from Lisbon, and it just seems to me that it makes sense if they're going to start marketing this route to start it from Lisbon, because that's something that, a place that's easy to get to, a place that people know, and then they say, oh, look at this, you can do this walk to Fatima. That's not the main Portuguese Camino, and it starts from Lisbon. Instead, you look at it and think it starts from Estoril. I don't know what that is or where that is.
Or how to get there.
Right.
And obviously people are going to be coming into Lisbon, you know, people who don't live in Portugal, they will be flying into Lisbon or taking a bus, however they're getting there. So yeah, it would make a lot more sense if you can let them know that they could just start walking from Lisbon, because you can. We have actually done that part, which will be our day one on this Camino. We have done that previously as a day hike, and it's perfectly feasible to do. And it's a nice walk along the river, which gradually becomes the sea.
Yeah, and there's a couple of other reasons that it's interesting for us to add this extra day. One that we've mentioned already, that we get to start at our own door. Mm-hmm. And it's another little kind of bonus for us, is that we're walking west from Lisbon. And the main Camino, Portuguese Camino that we've done before, it heads sort of east and then swings around to the north. And we live in the western part of the center of Lisbon, let's say. What that means is when we walked the other Portuguese Camino, we had to walk about 2 kilometers just to get to the cathedral, which is the starting point for most people. And that added a couple of kilometers to our day. And as we may have mentioned in the first season when we documented that Camino, we had to walk a long way on the first day because the albergue Al Priat was closed because of the pandemic. As a side note, that albergue is now closed permanently because they're rerouting this first day from Lisbon, which should be ready this summer, although it's not currently ready yet. But that will make the Camino shorter in terms of getting to a place like Villafranca de Xira. Anyway, so we have to add a couple of extra kilometers to our day. And this time we're kind of starting already in the western part of town. And so it takes a couple of kilometers off compared with if we were starting in Alfama. And the other thing is that one of the first things we're going to get to is Belang. Belang, for people who know, is a place that's basically within Greater Lisbon, but it's essentially a small town that's kind of outside of Lisbon to the west. And it's a very important place in terms of the Age of Discovery, and subsequent to that in terms of Portuguese identity. So for example, the Belang Tower, which we're going to walk past tomorrow, is a symbol, or the symbol really, of Portugal. And so that having that little extra aspect to it just adds a little bit more to this idea that this is a Portuguese walk for us with our newly minted Portuguese citizenship. And again, for, you know, if they want to just extend this Camino one day, you know, going past Belang would be a draw card, I think, for other people, people coming, especially from overseas. Obviously, Portuguese people know Belang and have been there, I'm sure, several times. Anyway, we go there all the time. We used to run there.
But nowadays, we still run, but not quite as far. So we haven't made it to Belang in a while.
Yeah, we're not in great running form at the moment. Hopefully in good walking form. But what that means is it'll just be nice to walk past Belang tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, the monuments there are the Monument of the Discoveries, the Geronimos Monastery, and the Belang Tower, these three famous places in Belang. And so we'll walk past those in the early morning, and we'll be able to stop in Belang maybe to pick up something to eat or to pick up bread, I think, for our picnic lunch. And then we'll continue on our way. We'll go through Estoril and then continue to Cascais, and then that'll make our day two a little bit shorter. And so Cascais is on the ocean, and so that'll be our first and last look really up close at the ocean, although we've done that before. We walked from Tavira on the Camino Ascent. We left from the ocean, and then after day one we didn't see it again. And then on the second day we'll walk to Sintra. Sintra being very well known as this town that has these palaces and a Moorish castle, and it's very much this special atmosphere, kind of fairy tale kind of town with these palaces from the 19th century, and it has a lot of appeal. And we've obviously been there several times as well, and you lead a tour that included as part of the tour goes there every year, so it's not a new place for us. But the interesting thing is that Sintra is quite high up, and we'll have to walk up to it from sea level. Mm-hmm. And we've previously done this leg twice. We did it once as a training walk, and we did it a second time with friend of the show, Darren, who was on our podcast last year. But both of those times, we've taken transport to Sintra and then walked downhill to the ocean. But this time, we'll have to walk uphill to Sintra.
Yeah, so we'll see how ready we are. Like I said, I did spend 3 months in Ethiopia recently and did quite a few hikes there at high altitude and was doing lots of hill walking. So hopefully that will still do me well and I'm still in hill walking shape, but we'll find out soon enough. And after that, I think it'll be more flat. I think that the second day will be pretty tough, but after that, I don't think there'll be as much hill walking, but we'll see.
Yeah, and so we hope to make it to Fatima in about 10 days. We've seen tracks and stages that do it in, I think, about 8, but those are quite long stages. It's sort of around 30 kilometers day after day after day.
Yeah, I can't do that.
And so we sort of basically went through it together and kind of looked to see, you know, how could we shorten these stages in terms of where is there accommodation available? And it wasn't always easy, but we've come up with a plan that we think works. And so that's what we're going to do. And, you know, it's interesting because we have been to a few places that are on this Camino, apart from Eshtadel, Qashqai, and Sintra that we've already mentioned. We go through Obidush and we're going to be staying a night there. We've been to Obidush several times. It's a beautiful medieval town. You also go to Obidush as part of this tour that you lead in Portugal every year. And so it's this walled town and it's really nice to go up on the ramparts and you get a great view over the town and it's very well enclosed within these city walls. And so that's really nice. And so we'll spend a night there. We'll also be going to a town called Alcobaça, which has a famous monastery. And really before we lived in Portugal, we did a little trip in Portugal just as a 1 week trip. Or I think it was a 2 week trip, including a week in Spain and a week in Portugal. And there were these three monasteries that were all nearby and we visited all of them. And so one is this one at Alcobaça, one is at a place called Batalha, and the other is the Convento do Cristo in Tomar, which is the most famous of all of them. And that's one that pilgrims can visit if they do the regular Portuguese route of the Camino de Santiago. So these other two monasteries are not on the main Camino de Santiago route, but at least this one, Alcobaça, is on the Camino do Mar that we're going to be walking in. So it's been probably, I want to say 8 years maybe since we went there, the one and only time that we've been there. So that'll be nice to go and rediscover this place again. And we've talked before about this idea of rediscovering places or going to places that we've been before. And sometimes you want everything to be new, but other times we've found that when you go back to a place, like if we go to a place like Obidush, you know, we've been there several times, but maybe we'll make a little discovery or we'll, you know, because we don't have to necessarily go to all the same places we've been the first time, we can maybe explore it a little bit more. And we found that in Tomar when we were on the Camino, that we didn't need to go to the Convento do Cristo because we'd been to it twice before. So we had a walk around and we went to some old churches that we hadn't seen before. And so there are several places that we have been to before on this Camino, but there are other places that we haven't been to. And one of them is called Mafra, and there's a palace there which is very famous within Portugal. It's very well known, and we've never been there, and it's not even that far from Lisbon. We could easily go as a day or as a half day and go to it. I don't know why we've never done that, but now we get to discover it on Camino, so that's something else, something new.
Yeah, it has been something that's been kind of vaguely on my list, like, oh, we should really do that sometime. And of course, you know, a lot of the times you just never get around to the things that are close by because you think, oh, we can do it anytime. So now this gives us a reason to go. So yeah, that I'm definitely looking forward to Mafra because that is of the famous kind of well-known or at least well-known within Portugal destinations that are on this Camino. That is the one that we haven't ever been to before. And then, of course, there are a number of other places we'll be passing through and sleeping in that I've never heard of. So that's always fun too. I'm looking forward to discovering new parts of the country that aren't well known, but still, I'm sure, have something to offer in terms of giving us a more fuller understanding of what Portugal is.
Yeah, and as we've talked about many times, that's for us a huge part of what pilgrimage is that you do walk through these random places that you've never heard of, and you might discover something, there might be some castle that you never knew existed that was there, or you may just have interesting interactions, and these can be, or there can be all kind of aspects to this. You know, we've been in villages in Portugal where there's been almost nobody there, where we've walked through a village that has two people living in it, or we've had encounters with bread vans and bibliobuses and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, that's one of the great things about pilgrimage, is that you never really know. And it is interesting that one of the towns, and I've almost forgotten the name of it, is that we'd sort of looked at it in terms of the distance and thought, oh, this could be a good place to stay for a certain day, and there's a one or two places where you can stay there. And then I realized that I had it marked on Google Maps. I have no idea why. But every now and then, if I hear about something or I read something, I just will mark a place. And what I should really do is then put a label on it and give the reason why I've marked it. And so I don't know why I marked it, but it's obviously a place that I thought, oh, this could be interesting to visit. And I have no idea why, but we're going to go there and find out. Maybe it's just a nice little village with some nice medieval buildings, or who knows what there is there. But yeah, that's all part of the discovery of pilgrimage.
Yeah. So lots to look forward to. We're ready to get going. We will be leaving tomorrow morning and we'll be updating along the way.
All right. So until next time, buon camino.
And well, all right. Buen camino. Even though we're staying in Portugal this time.
Thanks for listening. For more great content about the Camino de Santiago, visit our website at spiritofthecamino.com. And follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Spirit of the Camino. Buen Camino.